Just waiting for another couple of minutes until it turns to 3 o'clock. But in the meantime, if there are any people here who are coming for the introduction to meditation class, the series of 4 lectures designed for those who haven't done much meditation before, that class is being held in the room to my right. As you come in here, just as you come that way, the first room there, I think it's been taken by John Treasure at this time. So those who want to get the foundations correct, the basics in line, that is the place to go. For those people who are expert meditators, who are about that close to enlightenment, then this is the place to come. So we'll see how it goes. As I mentioned, the main difference is here it gives me the opportunity to talk about other aspects of meditation, which are not just for beginners. And also we learn here how to meditate a little bit longer, so for 40, 45 minutes. And if you haven't meditated before, that period of time might be a bit challenging for you. So this is for the ongoing meditation group. Excellent. Okay, it says 3 o'clock there, so we may start. So welcome everybody. One of the aspects of meditation I usually don't have enough time to talk about is one of the important purposes of meditation, and also one of the requisites of success in meditation, is lessening what we call the 5 hindrances. This is a classic concept in Buddhism. 5 hindrances are things which distort perception, make you see things not in the correct way, and also weaken the stillness of the mind. And basically those 5 hindrances are wanting, and the opposite of wanting is not wanting something. Those are the 2 main ones. To really get into some nice meditation, we learn how to be content, to be at peace with what's happening right now, even if it's not what you want, to be with it, and to be kind to it. The kindness is important, and it's well signified by one of these stories, which I often quote, you know, from the Buddha, although when I say this, it has been embellished by me. And that is a story of the monster who came into the emperor's palace. Sometimes I say empress, sometimes I say emperor, to keep gender equity. Today it's the emperor. So, the emperor came to the Buddhist Society of West Australia to listen to a nice talk, and at the end of the talk he went back home into the palace and found a big monster had crept into the palace, and the monster was sitting on the emperor's chair, the throne. All the security had freaked out when they saw such a violent, angry monster, and they let him go and sit there. So how did the emperor react? The security, when they found out that this where this emperor was sitting, took out their swords and flexed their fists, made threats. But at every unkind word, unkind deed, unkind thought, that monster just grew an inch bigger every time. More violent, more ugly, more terrible. And so when the emperor came back, this monster was huge. So big that the emperor realized the response of his security was not good enough. So instead the emperor said to that monster, "You've all heard the story so many times. What did he say? Welcome. Welcome, monster. Thank you for coming to visit me. It's so kind of you to find the time to drop in. Has anybody got you anything to drink yet? When you come into the Buddhist society on a Saturday afternoon, does anybody greet you and ask you, Jeff, do you want something to drink? Did they ask you that today? You know why? Because you're not a monster. You're a kind guy. Sorry. But he was such a kind, this emperor. And so, do you want something to drink? And it was sincere kindness, so kind that they noticed the monster shrank a little bit, got less ugly, less violent, less oppressive. And so everybody else realized their mistake. They were treating these negative things like a monster in your house with negativity. And it was feeding the monster. So then they started offering something else. They offered this monster some delicious pumpkin soup with lots of natural vegetables in it. That's on offer later on, apparently. And they offered this monster a nice seat, a foot massage. Have you ever seen monsters? How big they are? They have these huge heads. So they gave the monster like a neck massage. Imagine how much that would have felt. The monster had this huge head, and his shoulders must have hurt so much. And at the end, even the beginning of the massage, the monster liked this so much, he shrank even further, became less ugly, less aggressive, less of a problem. And they gave this monster so much kindness that soon it was back to the size when it first came in. But they never stopped. They kept on adding the kindness. You see? Be careful, because Jacob might shrink a bit now. So much kindness got thinner and thinner and thinner until he became so small, one more act of kindness and the monster vanished completely away. And that's actually, it's a story in the suttas. When I first read that, I thought, wow. There's some powerful psychology there. If you treat things which are not like with negativity, with anger, get out of here, you don't belong. A lot of times it just gets worse. That's one of the reasons why when we practice not having these five hindrances, not going according to them, something happens in your mind you're not very happy with, you just stay with it. Welcome bad thought, no unpleasant memory, into my mind. The door of my heart's open to you. Come in. If you be kind to those things, you'll be surprised after a short while, whatever that bad thought or memory is, it gets less and less of a problem, and eventually just vanishes that way. If you say, get out of here, how can I stop you coming into my mind? It gets worse. That's an example of the hindrances. It takes some wisdom and some courage even to allow bad things to stay in your mind. But after a while, they can't last. You're not feeding them. And so they soon disappear. We learn about these five hindrances, and it gets the negativity as well. Somebody comes late. Why do they keep coming late? Why do they keep banging the doors? Why do they keep doing this? Does that get rid of the problem or make the problem worse? I often tell this in meditation retreats. Sometimes people say, Ajahn Brahm, on these meditation retreats which I conduct, you know, some people, they always bang the door when they come in. They always, whenever they get up early in the morning, they make themselves a cup of tea or coffee. It's about 4 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the morning, and they always hear, as they stir in whatever they stir into their mug. And they say, they go on retreats all the time, we know who they are. Ajahn Brahm, can you please ban them, or at least put them in the noisy people's cottage? Does that work? Because I tell them, the bang of the door, bang, it lasts for maybe less than a second. But if it reverberates in your brain, then it really sounds a lot. It's all those thoughts it generates. That's what the real noise is. So that negativity creates what we call restlessness. Business to be done. Thinking. How can I find a place where it's not so noisy? It may be, I don't know about you, but I love cold weather. So today is unusually warm. As soon as I came in here, I looked, where is the air conditioned control? I think they've hid it from me. Otherwise it'd be minus 16 on the temperature dial there. Well, I think, no, no, it's okay, it's fine. So instead of thinking about anything, instead of having that restlessness, we make peace with how we feel. We don't react with any type of negativity. We allow it to be. Even I saw Grumpy. What, is that a Grumpy on your t-shirt? Sorry, Grumpy, yeah. Even Grumpy, there was this girl at one of my retreats in Jhana Grove years ago, and she wanted to leave. You know, halfway during the retreat, because she said, I feel rotten, terrible, I'm so grumpy. And she said, I look at everybody else as I'm passing, they've got the big nice smiles on their face. And even you, Ajahn Brahm, you've got a big smile on your face. That makes me feel worse. I'm the only one in this meditation retreat feeling grumpy. And the solution to that was so easy, but a wonderful solution. Can you just wait here for a minute? And she did. She had no clue at all what I was up to. There was a computer in the next room. I turned it on, and very quickly, in this beautiful Gothic script, computers do that, I wrote out the very first grumpy license. And I said, this license permits, and I put her name underneath, to be grumpy for any reason or no reason at all for the rest of her life and future lives. Until the coming of Maitreya Buddha, she's allowed to be grumpy. Let no one infringe the right to be grumpy of this woman. Signed, Ajahn Brahm Wangsa. And I gave her a grumpy license. You know, you need a marriage license, you need a driving license, you have a license for anything these days. So I gave her the grumpy license. And as soon as I gave it to her, she had permission, official permission from the monk who was teaching the retreat. She had permission to be grumpy. That was the end of her grumpiness. She laughed and had a wonderful retreat. She didn't have to try to fight and get negative towards the situation she felt. She could be at peace with her grumpiness. Do you understand the psychology behind that? So we are content, easily satisfied, we learn how to let things be. And then you find that those particular hindrances disappear. We can have peace. So we notice those hindrances. When you are sitting here meditating, when I stop talking, I promise I will one day stop talking in another 5 minutes. Then, if you can, so just allow this moment to be with kindness. The kindness is so important. It's not just with a boring equanimity, I don't care. You really care about this mind in this moment, and you care about it to give it a sense of safety and peace. Have you ever seen, like, sometimes I visit people's houses and they have animals like cats and dogs, and if you are kind to them, they relax. You know, if you're afraid or if, you know, you're tense, the animal picks that up. And they get tense too. I notice that's one of my jobs when any one of you come in here, you know, to crack a few jokes to make you feel, actually, does that make you feel at peace? Or does it make you feel, well, who is this monk? I better get out of here. I don't want to hear any more of these bad jokes again. But whatever, sometimes just being kind, being soft-hearted, That makes other people feel relaxed. And when they feel relaxed, then they can find some peace. They're not afraid of anything, even some of the stuff which comes up in your mind when you're meditating. You're at peace with things. And when you are at peace with things, with kindness, you'll find the meditation passes by those hindrances and you get quite still. When the mind becomes still and peaceful, then you find it gets power. It's a natural phenomenon. I've observed it so for many years in my own mind, and I've taught this and seen it in other people's minds. After a while, when you get still, you energize. And if ever you're meditating, sitting on the floor, after a while the back straightens all by itself and you feel energy inside of you. I don't mean anything weird, but just a greater sense of being alive. And that means you notice these five hindrances are losing their power. And eventually, when you come out of meditation, the five hindrances are just not there. And that's an important part of the meditation process. You meditate, and all this wanting, you're so happy and content, you don't want anything in the whole world. If somebody gave you something, fine, but if they didn't give you something, fine. You're just really peaceful, you had a wonderful meditation. The wanting is not there. Any not wanting aversion is not there. It's one of the reasons how we test if a person's had a good meditation. I tell them, you? No, I'm sorry, just people with beards can't get in deep meditation. Of course you can, I just do that to try and upset you. I'm not mine because I'm cruel, I just want to test you. Can you be upset? And if you don't get upset, fine, that must have been a deep meditation. Because that's what happens when you come out of meditation. You're just so peaceful, so happy, nothing can disturb it. Even last night, I was telling that story because I just went past Mercedes Catholic Girls' School yesterday. And I'll never forget that school because I'd given a talk there one day. And the next day, I was walking down St. George's Terrace on some other business, and two of the school kids, the girls, came and said, oh, you gave a talk at our school yesterday. And I said, well, I'm amazed you remember me. And they said, we'll never forget you. I thought, how cute that was. I only gave a talk, couple of talks in the afternoon, and they said they will never forget me. And then they continued, how can we ever forget a monk whose name is Ajahn Brah? There's an M on the end, Brahm. But nevertheless, that was fun. No one can upset you if you're peaceful. And even more than that, there's no restlessness. You're enjoying this moment, so whatever you see, whatever you hear, you can actually hear it clearly. And the sloth and torpor is not there. The clarity of mind and the other things which don't happen when you come out of a nice meditation, when the five hindrances are gone, these other qualities called discontent and weariness. Do any of you ever feel weary of your life? Having to do the same old jobs again and again, having to fill out stupid forms for some government agency. Here we go again. What do I have to do this for? You ever get that tiredness and think, I'd rather just stay in bed and have an extra hour of sleep? If you ever feel that weariness, especially in old age, how many people are old now? Come and be honest. Thank you, yeah. Yeah, thank you for that. Come on, Becky, you're old. Why do people just refuse to be old? I think it's, in the Buddhist culture, it gives you added gravitas. More respect to the elderly people. But anyway, the weariness disappears, you have energy.
And that's one of the wonderful things about what happens when these five hindrances disappear. So you feel more alive, more there, more enjoying the moment. That's why the five hindrances allow you to see things more accurately, more truly. Don't turn away from the world. You can notice it more beautifully and appreciate the people around you with actually more acceptance and kindness. You're not playing kindness anymore. It's real. So anyway, that's something which happens with the hindrances gone. So maybe I can talk more about that afterwards. But now I do keep my promises, and I promise I'd quite be quiet and shut up. Kind of. I'm going to still lead the beginning of the meditation, but let's start the meditation now. So if you want to get yourselves in a comfortable position, you've been sitting down there for a while, you can get up and stretch your legs a little bit if you wish, or just expand the chest, put your hands up and down, whatever it is, just to give yourself some little exercise before we actually start the meditation. Very good. So now, close your eyes. With your eyes closed, first thing I do is just check generally the comfort of my posture. When I did that, I noticed that my waist belt is a bit tight. I'm going to loosen it when I can get to it through all the layers of clothing. And then once I get into a reasonably good position, as you know, I do a body scan first of all. Just go through my whole body from top to bottom, or bottom to top. Starting with my feet, even my toes. Toes, how are you? Can you be aware of your toes? Can you be able to distinguish the feeling of your big toe and your little toe? If you look, you can know. But it's not just becoming aware of those different parts of my body called my toes. I also add this kindness to them, caring for them. When I do this, I can feel them relax. They haven't done that yet, in my case, so I'm going to spend a few more moments just be with my toes. When I have good mindfulness of those toes, and add kindness, I start to feel them like tingling. It's not the best word, tingling, but there's so little language to describe physical feelings in your body. I feel them becoming at ease. There they go. I'm actually relaxing my own toes. And I go to the rest of my feet, soles of my feet, uppers. So just focus attention there, like zooming in on my two feet. And just like settling a child in bed, or a little dog you have as a pet, settling it down at night, stroking it, caring for it, until it feels so at ease it falls asleep. Kind of what my feet are doing now, relaxing to the max. Once my feet are at ease, then I go to my ankles, when I relax those muscles in my ankles, I learn how to do that, the ankles get stronger. They don't get injured if you trip. You don't tend to sprain anything anymore. It's a long time since I had a physical injury. I'm mindful of my body. And then move up, like doing a scan from the bottom to the top of your calves, checking everything is okay. And relaxing the existing state of those calves as you move up towards your knee. I can feel the, I can't call it itchiness today, but similar tingly sensitivity of the skin of my calves. And the muscles, which are quite relaxed, until I get up to my knee. When I get to my knee, spend extra time there, because I've noticed many people get injuries to their knees. They get tired or bruised or strained. And I do realize that at my age I should make sure that those knees are strong. To do that, the exercise is not bending it this way or bending it that way. It's relaxing those knees to the maximum. Because what I feel when they are really relaxed, that whatever flows through them, whether it's the blood or the lymph or whatever else, it flows through freely and keeps all those parts of my knees well supplied. Healed if they are tense, and keeps them feeling healthy. I can feel that now. And that allows me to feel confident I've done the very best to relax my knees with mindfulness and kindness. I can go up my thighs now. And as I scan my attention, my mindfulness, up my upper legs. Again, being interested and being kind. If ever I find anything which is an ache, a pain, a blockage, or something which is unusual, I will pause, stay there, and just relax everything as much as possible with kindfulness. And I always notice whatever was a tense feeling or a bit unusual feeling vanishes. Just the kindness is enough to heal. And then from the thighs I go up to the butt. Today my bottom is well balanced on top of the cushion. I know the feeling of tightness, as muscles pressed upon the cushion's surface. You may be on a chair, but you can feel the pressure of your body being held by the cushion of the chair. You can feel it. Make sure it's even and as easy as you possibly can have. And it's because it's even, doesn't get better, doesn't get worse, you'll find it will soon disappear. The brain will only notice things which change, especially if it gets worse. And then from there I go up to my waist. See, I'm scanning up my body. And as I get to the waist, make sure my back is in a good position. And there are two different types of comfortable positions. There's one where the back is okay for a few moments, but then you have to move it again. And there's others where it feels stable, strong, a position you can maintain for a long period of time. And that's what I do when I straighten my back. It works for me, it may not work for you. But find out the optimum position for your back right now. And then I go to the bottom of the torso again and scan upwards, going through the inside part of my body. Go to the digestive tract, and to the stomach, to the lungs. And if you feel any tightness, any ache, pain, anywhere in your torso, as you're going up, pause at that point. Don't be afraid, because a lot of times that part of your body just needs some attention, some kindness. The body has its own way of healing itself. Given the chance, I've been amazed at what my own body can do to heal things. And I keep scanning upwards, past my lungs, up through the esophagus. Then I get to my shoulders. And there I relax those shoulders. Yesterday I mentioned the exercise of just crunching up the shoulders and letting them go. They get more looser than when I started. Today I'm doing the imagining those shoulders as two sheaves of strings on either side of the spine. They're being pulled apart. That's why there's tension there. Now I imagine whatever's pulling them apart, let's go. And those muscles relax. There's nothing stretching them, extending them. They're all nicely at ease. Nothing to do. And my muscles feel that. The tension is gone. They also tingle with a sense of comfort. I go down my arms, past my elbows. If you've had any problems with your elbows, pause there and bathe them with your own kindness. And go past to the forearms, to the wrists, and to your hands. Any place which you pass over which needs extra attention, please give it that extra attention. Not only are you making your body strong and healthy, you're also practicing this strengthening of kindfulness, the ability to be aware of a part of your body wherever you focus it, and the ability to add kindness there and see how that enhances the experience. Makes it more pleasant, which means it's easier to keep your awareness on it. It's a secret of focusing. Add the kindness. When I get to my fingers on the hand, they're not in my normal position right now, I can feel that. They feel comfortable, that's good enough for me. I don't always follow the customs and traditions of my own meditation. I just ask my body, how are you? And my body tells me right now my fingers are fine. So that's where they can stay. And I go back up to my neck. And for me anyway, I notice that it's the position of my head is important. Too far forward, too far back, too far to the left or right. And my neck starts to ache. So I pay attention to the position of my head on top of the neck. And I balance that. And once it's balanced, the neck is fine. Then lastly, I focus on the feelings in my face. But today, maybe because it's a warm afternoon, I feel a bit of congestion in my nose. So I'm just going to spend a little bit of time on my nose, wishing it well. It's all the internal passages in my nasal cavity, whatever it's called. Not trying to get rid of anything, but making peace with it. Not overreacting. When I do that, I feel the air coming in and going out much more easily. And then I go to what I usually do, the front of the face, around the eyes and the mouth, relaxing all those muscles. And I can feel the tension in my face lessening. My face starts to feel at peace. I notice, as most people know, that any of those tightnesses in your face are the results of negative emotions beforehand. It is almost relaxing your facial muscles is a segue into relaxing the mind. And I spent these first 10 minutes focusing on my body. And the result is now it feels really at ease. I go to the whole of my body now, making sure it's all at peace. Pausing there. Because usually I feel this delightful feeling of relaxation. Now I can perceive it. And it always takes me into a deeper state of relaxation. You're just focusing on the delight makes a peace deeper. The relaxation more easy. And when it's ready, I let the body just stay there and put my attention on how peaceful I feel. Peace is a quality of your mind. So you are turning your attention to the mind now. I'm doing exactly the same, giving it kindfulness. Are you at peace? Give kindfulness to peace. Let peace be. Peace can get so incredibly deep and beautiful. And you also notice the cause of peace. Letting go of all past and future. You can only feel peace in this moment. That's the place where it lives. And as you keep focusing on peace, like you focused on your own body beforehand, you go deeper into peace and soon discover all the thoughts and descriptions and the words disturb that peace, and silence comes. Soon afterwards, you'll be able to experience your breath coming to you. You're not seeking for it, but it coming to you. And just don't do anything, just be kindful to whatever experience of breath you experience in this moment. Don't do anything. Be the passive observer, never a backseat driver. Just imagine this meditation to be like the driverless bus. You sit there and just look through the window and enjoy the scenery of peace stillness as the meditation goes by itself, naturally, to all the stages of breath meditation. I will be quiet now. is now getting close to the end of this meditation session. Don't open your eyes too quickly. Just know how you feel first. How much peace is in your mind? And how does that feel? As I said, when you are relaxing your body, to notice the delight in a relaxed body. If you can also notice the delight in a peaceful mind. And also, around that mind, this body, if the mind is peaceful, the body gets really relaxed. See if you can know that fully. You start seeing very powerful benefits to meditation. And then, coming to the end of the meditation, I'll ring the gong 3 times. At the end of that third ringing of the gong, please open your eyes. So now it is 4 o'clock. Usually we have the opportunities for people to ask questions. But first of all, are there any questions from the people actually in this room before we go to the questions from overseas? Okay, let's get the questions this way, from overseas. Very good. Thank you. Here we go. I said, from overseas, the first question is from Perth. We also got one from Nepal, and I'm not sure where the other one is from. From Perth. I am from Perth. I noticed you were talking about mental illness last night, only a tiny bit. I have schizophrenia and I find meditation most of the time helps me. I was told we shouldn't meditate. Is this true? No, it's not true at all. It's when people do have schizophrenia, you have to be very mindful and honest with yourself. Still, you know, if it's clinical schizophrenia, take the medication. And I've known a couple of people who've done a wonderful job as clinical schizophrenics, who've got some wonderful meditation, very peaceful beings. And I think I mentioned to you that 2 or 3 of those I give an ordination to. They're monks, they're very good monks. So it really depends just on how the condition is managed. And especially in kind communities, that kindness allows them to be, and they don't feel, this is talking to them, they don't feel they're under any stress or pressure, which means that some of the majority of the symptoms of schizophrenia don't manifest in them. It's wonderful to see that. So this person who mentioned this, as long as you don't try too hard and stress yourself out, you give it a lot of kindfulness, to that, the symptoms and the feeling of schizophrenia. You get to know it better than any psychologist or psychiatrist could ever do. You know how it works. And you know to be able to balance your lifestyle so it doesn't sort of, exaggerate into antisocial behavior, which makes, you know, your life more of a problem. So see if you can be kindful to it and you find you can live a wonderful life and meditate as well. The next question, after a nice meditation, should we direct the mind towards the thing we are trying to penetrate, or we just plant the seeds, keep watering the plants, and insight comes up when conditions ripen? Correct. You can't do things. If you start to do things after a good meditation, you spoil it. You just allow it to be and see how the mind can focus inwards. This is like a common little metaphor which I do. I hold up something else today. What's this? What is it? What else? I'm not going to waste time here, but a lot of time we give things a name and we think we know it, that we finish with it now. It's a source and that's it. But you do find that if you look longer with stillness and explore it, you can see all sorts of other ways of understanding what this actually is. And sometimes it gets almost endless. When you're very still, you can look at something for an hour and still not finish with it. And the weird thing is that when you are still and those hindrances have vanished, you don't see what you want to see. You don't want to capture the object or be the most insightful person who knows what this object is. It just becomes fascinating. And you see so much more in this than you've ever expected to see. I see one of these reflections which I see here just looks like a bird in flight. It's only a reflection from the window, but it's gorgeous. And there's so much else in here you can start to see. That's called insight. You see things you never expected to see. You see much deeper into something. And it's always with a sense of beauty and appreciation. If you try to do things and set yourself what you should do next, this never works. You have to let it happen. From Nepal, can we give suggestions to mind to close to the end of the meditation? Suggestions could be positive affirmations. Thank you, Ajahn. Usually, at the end of the meditation, the mind is too calm to do any affirmations. It's one of the reasons why, in all these years, it's hard to get a question from the floor after a deep meditation. You know, you're quiet and peaceful, you're happy. That's why you rely on questions from overseas. After a few minutes, then the brain starts to work and you can start to think of things. But beforehand, you're just so happy just being awake, being alert, and not really having those questions. So suggestions, positive affirmations, I'm not sure if that would work or not. Lastly, from Chia, how do you keep your back straight whenever you meditate? I seem to slouch after 10 minutes or so. Fine, let your body slouch if that's what it wants to do. Because I just remember in all those years I've been meditating, that over 50 years now, 54, 55, I remember my body used to slouch. I was young, I was tired. But then, after a while, you stop interfering with it. Okay, body, if you want to slouch, you can slouch. So I meditated slouching. And then, when I didn't interfere at all, I was just watching. The body straightened up by itself. It's one of those weird things you experience. Your body knows best, and the body will do that if it really wants to. So from those days on, I trusted my body. If you want to keep straight, you do it by yourself. So if you're slouching now, don't try and keep your body straight. Let it slouch. And then just watch and see what the body does. And the body just straightens up. It's weird, but it's true. Okay. Now hopefully your brains are starting working again. Are there any questions from my audience in front of me? For the second time? Oh yes, we got three. Goodness, okay. I think you had your hand up first.
No, I was just using the opportunity to say that the Kalyana Friendship Community is meeting at 5.
Okay.
Cook soup.
Yeah.
Come eat soup.
You know what the Kalyana Friendship Committee is usually abbreviated to? It's the KFC. So if you want to visit KFC this evening at no cost, come at 5 p.m. here. Advertising. There's a question over here somewhere. Oh, from you, yes, gentlemen, yes.
Hey, Arjan.
Hi.
I'm just wondering what happens, I don't know if this is the microphone, if you like struggle to know or you lose sight, because you, when you meditate you go away from where you are physically.
Yeah.
Like sometimes it'll make me confused or thrown off that I don't know where I am, or I can't pinpoint where exactly I am and I'm struggling to pinpoint.
Okay.
Where I'm going.
Doesn't matter where you are, but just to know how it feels. So sometimes you want to kind of give it a name or put it into the place where it should go in the process of meditation. But one important thing is just, you always are somewhere. There's something happening, otherwise you'd be unconscious. So just stay where you are and let it teach you what it is. You don't need to do anything, you don't need to struggle at all. It's a struggle which destroys the peace of meditation. So instead, you know, you've gone into a different state or whatever, you're not quite sure what it is, stay there. And after a while, the mind becomes aware of what it is. The best simile is when you're in, say you're in a forest, and you go out of the room, which is lit, into the darkness. When you first go to a different place in the forest, you can't see where you are. But after a few seconds, the pupils of your eyes dilate, allow more light to come in, and you start to get your night vision. You can actually see the part of the forest just in the starlight. And that's enough for you to know where you are. So that means, you know, there's always something you can be aware of. And sometimes when things start to disappear or they change, it's really fascinating just to stay there, be still, and eventually that night vision starts to happen and you can see where you are. You understand where you are. And it's later on, once you've gathered the data, then you can understand exactly where it fits into the scheme of things. Is that okay? Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
I used to be a scientist, and that was one of the things which I carried from that science. You don't make conclusion until all the data is in. So you may be in a strange place, basically strange results from the experiment. Just keep on gathering the data, and at the end you can figure out what it means. Was there a question around the back there somewhere? It is a question or a comment?
Question.
Okay. Go on. I saw someone put their hand up.
Say
there.
Something. Could be silly, Anjabram.
No, go on.
Yeah. You know, I'm talking about simple meditation, you know, not the complex jhana, okay? Simple meditation is supposed to be making us feel at peace, you know, mind over matter or mind of feelings, okay? Yeah. Could there be, I mean, for different people, okay?
Yes.
Different levels of getting the peace, you know? Some people who's more advanced, you know, like who meditates a lot, they can get the peace soon. Some could take longer. Is there such a thing? You see what I mean?
Of course there is, but it's not something which is inherent in the type of person you are. It's very much to do with what you've been doing before you sat down on your bottom and started meditating. If you've had a peaceful day, it's very easy to get deeper into peace. But you know, if you've been driving a car, how long does it take for the car engine to go cool? Sometimes it takes a while, especially if you've been speeding along. But if you've been just been driving a bicycle, that soon cools off very quickly. So it really depends on what you've been doing beforehand and how skillful you are just to let things be. And that means things cool off very, very fast. It's also just one of the reasons why, you know, how the Buddha taught, if you have good virtue, that makes the meditation powerful. You get deep peace very quickly. Because you've never done anything which harms another or harms yourself. And that makes it very easy for the mind to be still. You've got no business pressing on you. So anyway,
thank you.
Okay, thank you, Eddie. Now, any other questions before we finish off?
Just one more quickly.
Yeah, go on.
Okay. You know, can meditation? I'm talking simple meditation. In the longer run, you know, once you know it, it helps when we have a problem. Someone annoys us quickly. I think.
I didn't get it. Someone annoys you.
Yes, something happens that brings us annoyance or disturbing emotion, okay? Knowing meditation, we can quickly calm down also.
Yes, you quickly calm down. A lot of times it doesn't even disturb you, which is a weird thing. The sort of noises or the sorts of events which would give you a quick reaction, sometimes the mind doesn't react. It just is still.
Thank you.
No, thank you, Eddie. Okay, we can now just maybe end the session. This is just gone 4:15 when I'm supposed to end. So now we can bow 3 times to the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha if you wish, and then we can take a break. And if you want to get some of that delicious pumpkin, where's she gone? I think she's already gone out to eat it. No, pumpkin and love soup. When I said to eat it, I meant to heat it.
I don't want to talk into a meditation.